Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, product owners all over this great big world, including those of you in England, the UK, wherever it is. Welcome back to Deliver It. This is your Agile Product Centers podcast. My name is Corey Bryan, and I have been recouping from my trip. I have been trying to build a better podcast place to come to everybody from and to talk to everybody with, and hopefully the sound quality gets a little bit better over the next couple episodes as I dial it in and try to finish a project. It's a lot of effort. So I am really excited today because I have a guest. My guest today is a fantastic author, trainer, and a coach who has helped thousands of teams, including me, and individuals across the world deliver better products more effectively. Please welcome back to the show, Jeff Watts. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Corey. Good to be back. How are you doing?
Very good. You've been a very busy man, what with the new kid and the new app that you've launched. So thank you for taking time to come and talk.
Hi, you're welcome.
So Jeff's going to talk to us about our main topic today. The first couple of things I wanted to share was a couple articles and an article and a book that I read. The article is from Martin Stahl, who talks about the product owner cargo cult detection checklist. So he wants to go through and decide or try to make some sense out of what makes a product owner a product owner. Three things that I really liked out of that list was I know the impact of the product on the user. So again, why does your product want to use, or why does your user want to use your product? What are they going to get out of it? The second one that I really liked was I understand my organization's goals and the product is contributing to them. Again, part of that connection with the stakeholder and making sure that you understand what they're trying to have your users do in your product, and then being able to align things, strategy, priorities, all those things are really good. And then the third one I really liked was I have a holistic view on the organizational system surrounding the value chain of the product. So you know where your product fits in to how customers are actually going to use it, where it fits into the company that you're working for. And that really, again, not focusing on velocity or stories or things like that, but understanding real impact of your products and where that it fits in with your business. So I really like those. Jeff, do you have any favorites when you read that?
Well, I like the middle one. So it's very easy to get attached to what your product is and what your product does and get just very personal about it, but it's got to be contributing to where your organization's going.
Yeah.
And certainly the larger the organization, the easier it is to just become a little bit isolated and going off in different directions. Part of that's on the organization, of course, to be quite clear about where they're going and, you know, not have too many a bit of a scattergun approach. But that's not only helpful in terms of the product, but also from a product owner perspective, speaking to product owners, coaching them. If they know how their product is contributing, it's more motivating for them. It's also more motivating for their team. There's that greater sense of purpose. So that one stands out for me.
Very good. Really good article from Martin. Go take a look and see which ones you like. The book that I finished in record time, I think, for me. I saw a recommendation from Joshua Kariewski, who recommended Domenica, I think, De Grandis, who has a book called Making Work Visible, Exposing Time Theft to Optimize Work and Flow. So another of my kicks of really excited about flow and trying to learn more about that. Her book exposes those time thieves, the five time thieves, which I really, really like. The first one is too much work in progress. A second one is unknown dependencies. Third is unplanned work. Fourth is conflicting priorities. And fifth is neglected work. She goes through really a lot of tactical things that you can do to expose that work using mostly Kanban, but a lot of visual ways and getting people to talk about it, getting people to see that there's too much work in progress, see that there's unplanned work coming up, see that there's conflicting priorities, and also go through the metrics that helps with that. Some of the metrics we've talked about before, cycle time, lead time, throughput, she really focuses on flow time and the metrics for flow. It's a really good book. It's a really easy read, a quick read. And I think it'll help if you're in a situation, even if you're not in an agile situation or you're trying to move to an agile situation and you don't know how to plan for unplanned work or dependencies and things like that. She gives some really good strategies and some really good tactics on making that visible to folks. So I highly recommend that book. Jeff, have you seen anything like that or had the opportunity to?
Well, I haven't read that one specifically. I'm wondering, is it flow in the same sense that Cicimentale means it, in terms of you get lost in your work and get really into something?
It's not that notion of in the zone. I think it's more about how can we show work flowing through our system, and how can we
steady cadence.
Yeah, really about throughput. So highly recommend that book. It's a really, really good one.
Yeah. I haven't read it, and she may well mention something along these lines, but another one that I throw into the time thieves things is around the procrastination. See, a lot of product owners who at one level know that they're putting off stuff that they know they should be doing, or the really important stuff, but there's plenty of reasons and excuses why. But that they'll find displacement activities to avoid doing what they know they need to do. And that, when you add all that up at the end of a month or the end of a quarter, it's quite a long time that gets lost.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
No doubt that this magnificent vessel will give excellent value for the dollars she'll be earning.
All right. So Jeff is here to talk with us because he inspired me while I was on the break with one of his YouTube videos, a really good YouTube channel. Check it out. And also there was a question from a listener, or a topic suggestion for a listener, who wanted to talk about dealing with stress as a product owner. And Jeff, one of the videos you had, which was fantastic, where we'll put it in the show notes, was you were stuck in traffic, or you were traffic, I guess is a better a better way to say that. And you talked about stress and how stress, the thing that I took away from that is stress is a choice. So talk a little bit about that experience and kind of, you know, have you thought about it since you've shot that video?
Well, it's a risky one. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I can't remember whether I said this in the video or not, but it was a little bit of a spur of the moment thing. So I was stuck in traffic, and as it turned out, it was some big crash a few miles up the road, and a big motorway in the UK, so four lanes of stationary traffic. I thought it was an opportunity to talk about something, because I'm one of my big issues personally is I don't like being late for things. Mm-hmm. I get a bit of a type A personality, really. I get quite frustrated quite easily. And it's one of the things I had to manage in myself over the years, really. And I was mentioned John Perry, who's a professor in the UK here, who introduced me to this idea that stress is a choice. So there are different theories with regards to stress. And one of the statements that really sort of stood out for me was, he said, stress is a choice because not everybody gets stressed by traffic jams. So it cannot be the traffic jam that causes stress. It's how you interpret that traffic jam and how you respond to the traffic jam. If a traffic jam caused everybody stress, then he'd buy that. But if there are people in the world that don't get stressed by traffic jams, then you have a choice about whether you get stressed by traffic jams. So he was talking about the mindset and your approach to it. And my mindset, what's going through my mind, or what was going through my mind, was I'm going to be late. This is a waste of my time. I'm frustrated. I want to know what's going on. I want to solve this problem. All those things were going through my mind, all of which I had very little control over. But if I change my mindset to, well, this is an opportunity to do something that I couldn't do before. So, for example, record a video that could be helpful to other people, that could add some content to my YouTube channel. I couldn't have done that if I was driving, A, because it's against the law, and B, because I would have been focusing on the road. Right. So it was an opportunity to do something that I wouldn't have been able to do before. I can't change what's going on outside. So stop worrying about it, and look what I could get from it. So I say it's a risky thing, because a lot of people, when faced with that statement of stress is a choice, will get very defensive about that and say, well, hold on a minute, I don't have a choice with regards to the stress that I'm facing. I can't control this stuff. It's affecting me. And I get there's an element of truth to that, but focusing on what you can control and focusing on how you react to those situations is probably a more helpful way of looking at it.
So that and your topic that you presented around that time, a mindful approach to product ownership, is kind of the reason I wanted to kind of invite you back to the show. And let's talk about stress. Let's talk about how we deal with it. Let's talk about where it comes from. Let's talk about ways that we can what we can do about it when people are under a stressful situation, or they seem to have, you know, that notion of, I feel stressed about X, whatever that is. So, the first thing I wanted to kind of discuss is where it comes from. What are we stressed about? You know, there's all kinds of things. There's our customers we're stressed about. There's our stakeholders we're stressed about. You know, some of the relationships that we're in, either with team members or peers or bosses or other things that can provide, you know, some source of, stress, or some, as you call it, an activating event into stress. And really, I think that's about perspectives. It's about expectations. It's about fear. If somebody has an expectation that they're going to get something and we can't do that, or there's a problem with that, then that kind of triggers that stress activator to say, this is going to be a problem and I'm fearful of that, or I've set the, you know, my perspective is this is a bad thing, and that because I perceive that to be a bad thing, I'm building in stress. I'm, you know, assigning that a stressful relationship. But it can come really from anywhere, whatever we have in our history, whatever we have in our experience.
Yeah, well, so you're referring to a talk that I gave at the Scrum Gathering in London, a mindful product owner. And I introduced the concept of transactional analysis drivers, which is from the same sort of field that John Perry was talking about when he introduced me to this idea of the ABC approach, so an activating event, the belief, and then the consequences. So I talked about the five drivers, and I shared with you there that, you know, one of my drivers is around what we call a hurry up driver. So this sort of impatience, this always want to get things done really, really quickly. And if my desire to complete things quickly is put in jeopardy, then that would have caused me stress. It was a long time before I was aware of that, and I would be stressed, but I wouldn't be aware why I was stressed until I realized that actually that's something that I liked. I liked completing things quickly, and I worried about doing things being late. And once you're aware of it, then you can kind of think, okay, well, that's something. That's a thing. All right. What can I do about that? And I can choose to either accept the state as it is. I could choose to rationalize that state and think, well, hold on a minute. What are the potential consequences here? How real are my concerns here? And is there anything within my control that I could do? So the hurry up driver was just one of five that I introduced the group to there. The others are around please me, which a lot of product owners will face. You know, a lot of stakeholders asking for things, a lot of bosses asking for things. You know, having to make difficult decisions, having to prioritize against stakeholders, tell the team this is what we need to do, these kinds of things. There will be challenges to this please me driver where, you know, basically people like to be liked. You know, and that's not a bad thing. The other ones are around being perfect. Again, we can probably quite easily draw the parallels there to a product owner who would really like to have a perfect product, especially in an agile space. And the others, maybe we're a little bit more abstract for the audience that I was talking to, but they're around being strong, which, and all these things were messages that you get really as a child, you know, be strong, be brave, these kinds of messages. And if I let my guard down, if I appear vulnerable, then that's a bad thing. And in terms of building rapport with stakeholders, building rapport with the team, a product owner needs to be comfortable with their flaws, be comfortable with their weaknesses and where they're vulnerable. And the last one was around try hard. And again, a lot of your listeners will probably resonate with this. You know, as long as you do your best, it'll be all right. All of these things can be helpful, right? Because if you don't have this hurry up driver, you never get anything done. If you don't have this please people driver, you're going to alienate everybody. So it's all helpful stuff, but it's whether it's becoming unhelpful. And it's out of balance. And unless you're aware of which drivers are affecting you more, you're really just shooting in the dark as to whether you're being effective or not.
Yeah. I at various times, and, you know, I used to be a lot more perfectionist than I am now, because I've accepted that, you know, not everything is going to be perfect. And even if it was going to be perfect, I can't make it perfect. And I don't want to be the jerk who tries to force things to be perfect, right? What is it? Better is the enemy of good, or good is the enemy of perfect, or something like that. I can't remember the phrase, but it's good enough is good enough for now. And, you know, as long as you can make something, as long as something can get out and gets feedback on it, that's good enough for now. And then keep, you know, you can chase perfection. Maybe that's okay, but you won't ever get it. And that should be okay too. So, I do find that the ambiguity and the chaos, comes, you know, some product owners get a lot of stress about, well, I don't know what to do next, or I don't know how to do this thing. And that causes that stress reaction. That causes, you know, because I don't know, I feel uncomfortable with not knowing. And, you know, maybe that's one of the five you talked about, or a couple others, but, I definitely find that people get stressed about not knowing, and definitely find people get stressed about the time aspect. The, you know, I like being on time too. You know, what happens between now and the time, like last night, I had to be somewhere at 7:30. I could tell I wasn't going to be there at 7:30. I'm like, okay, I can feel myself starting to get a little antsy going, you know, we're not leaving yet. I can't get there at 7:30. This is going to be a problem for me. I know it's going to be a problem for me. How can I not sound like a giant, you know, bag of hammers to you know, say I need to be there by 7:30? So, but I think all those stress reactions, just your notion of knowing what stresses you out and knowing what is going to happen before it happens. Again, what are your expectations? What are your fears? I used the example before that when I know I have to go to the DMV to renew my driver's license or something like that, the DMV sucks. It's a horrible experience. Nobody likes doing it. So I plan on being there for 4 hours. My expectation is it's going to take me 4 hours to go through. That way, when it only takes me an hour, I'm happy. So I've set my expectations because I know it's a stress reaction for me. I know it's something that's going to bother me. When I have conversations with executives and I have conversations with team members that I know are going to be rough conversations, I know they're going to, you know, have some stress or some arguments around them. I try to rehearse or set those conversations up so that they're not as bad. And I don't get as stressed about them when they do happen.
Yeah. No, there's good strategies. My wife's always said to me, if you plan for the worst, you can't be disappointed. And it's a bit of a pessimistic view in many ways, but it is a strategy for managing impact. And all humans need to manage themselves. And I use the phrase, write the rules of the game so you have a chance of winning. Mm-hmm. And it's not about manipulating situations. It's about giving yourself a chance of success. And often we sabotage ourselves, either consciously or unconsciously, because we don't actually know what are our trigger points. You mentioned about ambiguity and chaos, and I think that's a really important one, especially in an agile space. And I've written about this and talked about this quite a lot, because in an agile organization, in the complex domain where new product development generally sits, we are explicitly jumping into ambiguity. There isn't a playbook that you can follow. Building a new product isn't a step-by-step guide. There is by definition uncertainty in there. And all human beings, I would say, their anxiety increases in relation to the amount of ambiguity. We just like to be certain of things. Yeah. Even to go so far as to say, I'd rather be wrong and be certain about it than potentially be right. And I reference a study which I should be able to reference properly, and we'll do this properly in the show notes. I'll find out a reference for you. But it was to do with electric shocks. And so a group of people were offered the choice. Would you rather have an electric shock now, or the potential that sometime in the next hour you might get an electric shock? Mm-hmm. And if you take an economic approach to this, a rational approach to this, the answer should be, I'll take my chances, because there's a chance that I don't get one, as opposed to the certainty that I will get one. But more people chose, well, I'd rather have that shock now than have the potential hanging over me, this sword of Damocles hanging over me. So we are hardwired to avoid ambiguity. And yet an agile approach is basically saying, we are going to be ambiguous.
Yeah. The notion that, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but let's go forward and find out. You have to be, I can't remember if it was one of your books or cards or something else where you said you need to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's okay, or if that's not one of your cards, it should be. But that's something like, you know, it's okay. It, you know, you don't have to know everything. There's going to be some things you discover. That's okay. You know, that, you know, you don't have to know all the pieces. You don't have to know all the things that a customer will want, need, or do. You have to know a good number of them. You have to understand some things, but you don't have to know actually everything. That's a failure mode.
And actually, so what I do a lot of the time with product owners and other people is kind of flip that. What you've just said there is, you know, if you did know everything, if every minute of your day was mapped out and you know exactly what was going to happen, what everybody was going to say to you, and there was no uncertainty there, would you actually enjoy that day? And I think on the face of it, some people would say, well, yeah, because I got no surprises. But equally, you have no surprises. It's dull. It's predictable. People get bored very easily, and there's a positive to stress, because if stress is too low, so first of all, if stress is too high, then we can burn out. But equally, if stress is too low, then we have this concept of rust out, right? We just atrophy. We get bored. Nothing's going on, right? So we need a bit of stress. We enjoy a bit of stress, as long as it's manageable. In the coach's casebook, I talked about the idea of, you know, your comfort zone, your stretch zone, and then your panic zone. Mm-hmm. And we grow when we're in our stretch zone, and we enjoy being in our stretch zone, as long as we know we can come back to our comfort zone at times. It's being in the panic zone that's not comfortable. When we're in the panic zone, we can't think clearly. We have tunnel vision. We can't really see what's going on around us. We make instinctive and often knee-jerk reactions that are safety-based to try and get us back into that safety zone.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love that idea of the safety zone and the comfort zone and the stretch, you know. And it's different for everything, right? For a product owner, it could be, you know, I'm really comfortable doing roadmaps and not comfortable with talking to executives, or I'm really comfortable with stories, but I'm not comfortable with interviewing customers. So maybe that's, you know, but I guess the step is, what can you do to get comfortable with that, or to try it out and experience it and, you know, have some learning, fail a little bit, you know, try something else to get better at it. So take those steps.
Gradual exposure, which is often a sort of phobia treatment. So, you know, if you're frightened of spiders or something, then you just get comfortable with being in the room with a spider that's stuck in a glass case, and you know it can't get out, and it's on the other side. You can barely see it, but you know it's there. And if you're wired up to a heart rate monitor, you can see the stress levels going up, the heart rate, the blood pressure going up, but then it'll come down over time as you get used to it. And then you can bring it closer, and the heart rate goes up again, and the blood pressure goes up again. But then it stabilizes because we get used to it. And it's this gradual exposure over time. And as a product owner, whatever it is, you're right, there'll be things that we're more comfortable with and less comfortable with. And just gradual successes as well as gradual failures. But also, if you've got something that you are, some situations where you are more comfortable, you can use those strengths. You can mine those strengths and apply them in different circumstances. So what is it that I'm doing or I'm thinking in those situations that would be useful to me in other situations?
Yeah. And I guess, so talk about what to do with all that stress, right? You talked about the ABCs, your activating event, which is what causes the stress, or what you think causes the stress. The belief system is, why are you stressed about that? And then the emotional consequences. I think you talked about the feeling words is really what does that mean? So I like that as a simple way to kind of diagnose each situation. The belief system, again, one of the really powerful things is, you know, why do you believe this thing is causing you stress? What is it about this thing? It's not that you're stuck in traffic. Like you said, it's the fact that I'm going to be late and I don't want to be late. And that's what bothers me is, you know, when I tell somebody I'm going to be there, I want to be there. And that really bothers me. And then the consequence of that, I feel like I've let somebody down, or I feel like I can't be trusted, or I'm not honest, or whatever that consequence that you're thinking of. That's really a way to think through that. I like that.
Yeah. And there are a number of different intervention points, right? If you think about it this way. So first of all, can I change the situation? If you think about it rationally, maybe you could, you know, maybe there is some way of getting off that road onto a back road. Maybe, I don't know. But if there isn't, then accepting that and then thinking, well, so what, as you said, what am I believing about this? And it might take a few different, you know, almost like a five whys approach.
Yeah.
So why am I stressed about this? Because I think I'm going to be late. Okay. Why are you worried about being late? Because I've said to someone I'm going to be there, and they're going to work. Think I'm a unreliable person. Okay. Why is them thinking you're an unreliable person a problem? Blah blah blah. And the more you do that, the more assumptions you're uncovering. So as well as finding different intervention points, you're also finding the opportunity to challenge some of those assumptions. So really, if you were being brutally honest with yourself, is the fact that you got caught up in traffic mean this person's going to think you're unreliable? What are the chances of that? And is there a way that you could mitigate that particular problem? Like give them a call. Okay, stress levels reduced. I wish there was a phrase that I've heard in various formats, which is probably why I can't remember it exactly, because I think it's been changed and tweaked so many times. But basically, if you worry about something, then you die twice.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Heard something like that.
Something along those lines. So you're causing yourself the stress of an outcome that might not actually happen. So if it happens, okay, then have that negative feeling. But no point giving yourself that negative feeling now, because it might not happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And along with the ABCs that you talk about in the video, Jeff, there's a couple things in the articles that I linked that I really like. There's four A actions that you can take to deal with stress. The first A is avoid. Say no. And there's a lot more information, but that's a simple, you know, if it's something that stresses you out, like a family thing, or if it's a prioritization call, or if it's a conversation, you can say no. It's okay to say no to some of those things. Again, magic words for a product owner is no. The second one is alter. So change how you communicate. So maybe try talking about your stories differently, or maybe try talking to your teams differently. Change how you're actually acting or behaving or doing something, and see if that addresses the stress, the cause of stress or not. And then the third one is adapt. So reframe the problem or your attitude about the problem. I use this one more than because I think about things. So I know that I'm going to go in and do a sprint review, and I know there's going to be some really high level stakeholders there, and I know they're going to ask where the rest of it is. Right? I've only delivered two stories of, you know, a lot, and they're going to want to know where the rest is. I'm going to reframe the problem of not I'm showing you. You know, we're 2% through. I'm showing you here's the thing that we can do now. So I'm reframing that. Even if it's something that's going to stress me out, I reframe the problem to a positive problem. Kind of like my DMV example is I'm going to reframe this as something that I want to learn, or something that I'm going to get really good feedback on. And then that changes your attitude about that stressful situation. At least it does for the majority of time when I try that.
Yeah. I like those.
And then the fourth one is the last one, I should say, is accept. You know, you can't control that, or there is no, you know, what can you control about that situation? And just say, you know what, this is the way it is. This is, you know, this is what my organization's allowing us to do from an agility wise. This is what the team's able to take on. That's a constraint. That's a limitation. That's a thing that I have to accept.
Mm.
So I like those four. That's really interesting ways to kind of think about things, your stress reactions.
Yeah, I like them. There's another phrase that I don't think I brought in the video, and I know I didn't have time to really go into in my talk at the gathering, but it's quite an important factor here, which is this phrase, the locus of control.
Mm-hmm.
So really quick overview. There's an internal locus of control and an external locus of control. So if you have an internal locus of control, then as a person, you think, right, I have control over what happens to me. I have control over my decisions. I have control over my actions. With an external locus of control, I generally think that things are controlled by fate, luck, other people, and my actions have very little impact on what happens to me. And generally speaking, the more of an, it's not whether you have an internal or an external, it's sort of, yeah, it's a mixture and it's somewhere along a balance, that kind of thing. But the closer you are to a strong external locus of control, the more that stress affects you negatively. And the reason for that really is what you're saying there is that if I struggle to actually turn this into a positive. I actually struggle to actually take action. I feel helpless, hopeless, and at the whim of factors outside of my control. So practicing adopting a more internally focused locus of control, and actually what can I control here, and doing something about it, reduces the stress and channels it in a more positive way.
Yeah, that is something that I definitely want to – it's something that you've helped me learn as well, and it's something that I kind of – thinking back about when did I think I had control, when did I think I had didn't have control, you know, over my career, I've definitely seen places where I said, okay, I understood that I didn't have control in this situation. I was okay with it. Why was that different? You know, one of the products I worked on, the company tried to kill it 7 times before they finally did. They kept talking to me about, oh, we're going to cancel the project. And I'm like, and the first time they told me, I was panicking. I said, oh my God, you can't cancel the project. I've built everything. I've done everything. You know, I was very invested in that. And then it didn't get canceled. And then the second time, they told me, I was like, oh, really? Again? And so, you know, the third, fourth time they told me, I was like, really? Are you really going to? Because it doesn't sound like it, because you've told me this multiple times. So, but what I realized was that's completely out of my control. Whether a company chooses to invest money in a product, that's a decision that I can give them information on, but I'm not making that decision. And I'd like them to make a decision that I approve of, but it's okay if they don't. But that notion of control, that, you know, other people's actions, other people's behaviors, other people's words, other people's mistakes that are not mine, those are things that are going to happen and you have to be okay with them. Like you said, my actions, my words, my thoughts, my attitude, the thing that I've been working with people on too is responses. My responses to things are really what will drive how people see me, how I see myself, what stress I'm actually under. I've told people, so one of the things that you shared also is the Sarah model, which is, you know, how to think about things when you're getting feedback or you're in a situation. But I've used that notion of, you know, responding to the need, don't react to the situation. Think about it, even just 10 seconds, just breathe. Because we tell ourselves stories. We tell ourselves in our mind why something happened in an instant. We don't even think about it. But if you stop and think about it, you can come back to, well, why did that happen? And what do I want to do about it? What do I want to do about it? You know, maybe instead of reacting, you come back with a question that you can ask to fill in a gap, because you might have a gap. Just putting that thought in your mind of, I might not know everything, so let me ask a question to get more information, and then I can react, or then I can respond after that. I love those concepts.
Yeah, I thoroughly endorse that, and it's that element of, I use the word catastrophizing. The more something stays in your head and you don't actually process it, the worse we make it. We tend to think the worst. We tend to take things far too personally, when actually it's nothing to do with us. And just by verbalizing it or writing it down, you realize actually the assumptions that are going into our thought process. Now, I'll say something else here, which again might sound a bit strange, is if it may well be true, but is it helpful? And so there may, if it's not helpful, is it worth dwelling on? And could you replace that unhelpful thought with another true statement that is more helpful? And again, we have choice over this. I know you're a big fan of Viktor Frankl as well, right?
Yeah, it's actually pushed me. That whole line of thinking of what is in my control, what isn't in my control, has really led me to, and I don't want to get too down this road, I just want to mention it's gotten me interested in the Stoic philosophies and, you know, the ways that you can think about things that are in your control and things that are not in control. And I love that quote by Viktor Frankl of, between stimulus and response, there's a space, and that space is our power to choose to respond. I just love the notion that you are in complete control of your thoughts, your actions, and everything. Somebody, the thing that I've told multiple people that I've worked with and told my kids and everything else is, nobody can make you mad. You make yourself mad about something. I do it too. I choose to get upset about the guy in traffic. I choose to get upset about the tester that didn't find a defect. I choose to get upset about the executive that doesn't make a decision that I like them to, right? I choose to get upset about that, or I can choose, you know what? That was going to happen anyway, or it's something that was, you know, they need to learn that themselves and I can't teach them that. So I love that. It's hard. It is damn hard to do that, to get into that mindset. And it's even harder to do it in the moment. It's even harder to do it when there's an unexpected thing that you have to react to. But I love that thinking, and I'm really digging reading more about it, understanding more, because it really does help me deal with those stress indicators of, you know, that was going to happen.
It just takes practice.
Yeah.
I don't want it to sound flippant, like, oh, it just takes practice. It is hard. But it's another one of those things that the more you do it, the easier it becomes and the more natural it becomes. But it takes some conscious reflection as well, and some humble reflection, you know, looking back at the end of the day and thinking, okay, so how did I react in certain circumstances? How many of those times would I, in the cold light of day, do again? Would I find helpful? And what would I like to experiment with next time? And what techniques could I just experiment with to give myself a chance of getting the response that I would like? The product owners, they have a huge leadership role. You know, people look to our product owners, our teams look to our product owners, our stakeholders look to our product owners, other product owners look to us, and they will look at how we act, and they will copy what we do in many ways. And we have a great opportunity to role model some helpful behaviors to other people, as well as being better and kinder and more helpful to ourselves. We have this responsibility to others as well.
Yeah. And the traits that you mentioned, both in the Coaster's Casebook and your presentation, you talked about, you know, maybe that's what we're, one of the things that's in our control is our perfectionism trait. You know, we control how much we want to be perfect. We control, you know, how much people pleasing we want to do. Is it rational that everybody's going to like me? No, it's not. So how could you deal with that? You know, are there certain people you're worried about liking you more than others? Or is there some way that you can knock down the expectations for whatever trait that you're seeing that causes you stress?
Yeah. And I don't want this to be a kind of shameless plug, but as you mentioned, I've launched an app, and one of the, so it's a deck of cards, an app full of decks of cards, and one of the ones that's really resonated with people more than others. So I've got this great feature where I can see who's favorited what cards.
Nice.
And one of the ones that's been favorited more than anything else is pleasing people the same as helping them? Sometimes actually the best thing we can do is upset someone, and that's going to sound really strange, right? But sometimes the message that we give is the right one. It's got to be one that people don't want to hear. And actually, by giving them a message that they do want to hear, we're doing them a disservice. And that's really resonated with a lot of people there.
Yeah, I love the, and we'll do shameless plugs later. Don't worry about it. But I love the notion, and it was a phrase, and I use it when I'm coaching people, is I don't want to inflict help on you. Is if you want help, I'm here. But you got your own path. You've got your own way. Again, these are not things I can control. So I'm going to let you learn at your own pace. I'm going to be there for you if you need support and help. If you want to ask questions or anything else, that's totally fine. But I can't control what you do, how you do it, or if you're successful or not.
Yeah. Defining the responsibilities.
Yep. So some other things you can do. One of the practical things for product owners, prioritize your priorities. I love doing this. Make a list, get your personal Kanban board, get your things that you need to do, and do what you do to your products. Rank them, you know, put them in priority orders. You know, if I get these things done, then that'll make me better. That'll make me happier. Whatever your priorities are, whether it's, you know, doing reviews, meeting with customers, you know, writing a story or running a report or doing something else, prioritize those things like you would do anything else. And then that helps you focus and get one thing done. There's so many days where I look at my list and go, I've got all these things I've got to do. I'm probably not going to do any of them well or finish any of them. But if I finished one of them and it was small or it was most important or whatever, then I would feel good about my day. I would feel like I actually accomplished something in the, you know, outside of the 8 hours of meetings I had during the day, I accomplished one task that I needed to do, and that helped reduce my stress. But I always recommend that. We've got a couple episodes about personal Kanban and everything else, but just prioritize your priorities.
Definitely. It's what you would do with your product, right? I'd rather have one feature complete than three things started and not finished with my product, because I can release it, I can get some feedback on it, I can get some sense of closure. Same in your personal life. You look after yourself to look after your product.
Yeah. Another practical thing, get rid of any disruptions or interruptions that happen, especially Slack and email notifications and all everything that pops up and makes a noise, turn it off. I've got to the point where, you know, in most of the days, I only check email like 3 times a day, and I will check, you know, Slack or Teams or something like that a couple of times as well. But it doesn't pop up on me. It doesn't interrupt the work that I'm doing. So it doesn't cause me stress because I'm working on one thing. Something else pops up and happens, and then I have to switch context and do that, and then I lose my activity. So I always recommend, it's the first thing I do whenever I start a place, is I go in and I change all those settings to not pop up notification sounds or anything else. It's just distractions and it's unnecessary.
Mm. It's a really good thing, and it's something that, again, gradual exposure and finding your sweet spot. So I had to deal with this myself this last week. So I took a few days off work, and my 12-year-old son and I we went down to the seaside for a few days for what we call a boot camp revision thing. So he's got some exams coming up, and he wanted some help with that. And so we went and we did some revision together, and not completely where we played hard and we worked hard. But for me, it was important to me that I focused on him for those few days. And although, you know, I run my own business and I've got all these emails coming in and all this stuff happening, knowing that I couldn't deal with that was quite stressful for me. Knowing things were coming on and people were waiting for me to reply to emails was stressful for me. So I had to find a sweet spot for me where I could make sure that wasn't being neglected. Because if I was worrying about that, I wouldn't be able to focus on it. So we worked out he was going to have some rest time, and I was had some time where I could catch up and little things, you know, like half an hour here and half an hour there. And just not going from one extreme to another. No, going cold turkey as well.
Yeah, very good. And one of the things you mentioned, that's a great thing to do also. Take time away. Get out of the building. Get out of your computer. Get out of the system. Go do something else. You know, that notion of self-care, that the real big notion of psychological safety. You know, am I comfortable in this situation? Do I need to take a break? You know, is it okay if I take a day vacation? Yes, it is. I'm telling all the product owners in the world, take that day of vacation. Go on that trip. Leave the computer at home. It's okay. The world will be just as screwed up when you get back as it was when you left. It's fine. Definitely take time away. You know, your family is very important. All those things are very important. And really, one of the things I really like, and that's one of the reasons I love podcasts too, is go to your support groups. Find people that are like you or that talk about the same things like you, and talk to them. You know, get you a coach. There's lots of ways to do that. There's lots of good people to do that. Find somebody that listens. There's lots of good meetups here in the area, and there's lots of good online systems, and there's lots of good podcasts and things that you can listen to kind of build your support group and just talk to people about things and see if it's something that can help reduce your stress, or you can help reduce somebody else's stress in situations. But build your network and actually, you know, find people to help, you know, through those situations.
Yeah, talking is a good underrated technique for managing stress.
Yeah. It's also something where I know if I've got, you know, some mentors or some coaches that I talk to, I know if I'm going in there for a specific thing that I need help with, that I'm getting stressed about, or a technique or something that I need to work on, or if it's just something where, you know, I just need 5 minutes to just bitch about something. Is that okay? Can I do that? Because I just need to get this off my chest. And if it's okay, again, just listening, just passive listening. There was a great, one of the people I'm working with now had a great session at one of the Agile conferences. He put up a lightning talk thing and put a panel up and said, tell me your problem, I will not help you. And he put tape over his mouth and sat there. And whole gamut was just talk. And I'm not going to offer you advice. I'm not going to criticize you. I'm not going to judge. I'm not, just talk to me. And it was amazing how many people, and that impact that visual kind of left with folks. I love that.
Nice.
Product owners, I know you're stressed. I know that stress comes from many different places. I'm stressed at various times during the days, as well, but there's things you can do about it. There's really good opportunities to reframe and kind of think differently about how that stress happens. And it's really good resources. And again, we'll link some of the things that Jeff's got, out there where you can actually look and say, how can I actually work on being less stressed. So I hope you do take advantage of that. Any other thoughts or closing ideas around stress, Jeff?
Yeah. So my latest thing that I developed basically from empirical evidence of working with not just product owners, but with other people. So we talked a little bit about where this stress can come from. It can come from other people. It can come from situations, but predominantly it's coming from ourselves. And the thought processes that we have. And unfortunately, we've had years and years, some of us more than others, of reinforcing those beliefs that we have and those thought processes that we have. So it takes a little bit of time to unpick them and replace them with new ones. And so what I've been working with when in my one-to-one coaching with product owners is just changing those habits slowly and steadily over time. And we call them positive affirmations. So replacing an unhelpful true statement with a more helpful true statement. And it does take repetition to change this. So the latest deck that I added to my app is around positive affirmations. So for product owners, you're repeating to yourselves daily. It might sound a bit strange, but putting it, you know, looking in the mirror every morning, saying it's impossible to please everyone. So I'm just not going to try to please everyone. Yeah. Feedback on the product is not reflective of me as a person. It's a true statement and it's a helpful statement. Mm-hmm. People can dislike my decisions without disliking me. And so it's a set of these things where basically you can rewire the neural pathways in your brain to have more helpful suggestions. And it starts off with this slightly uncomfortable, slightly unreal statement of talking to yourself. But the more you do it, the more it becomes unconscious, subconscious, so that when a situation arises, that's what pops up rather than, are people going to hate me and I'm never going to get another job in my life? You know, no one will turn up to my funeral. These kinds of unhelpful thoughts.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Very good.
So help yourself.
Yeah. So product owners, we know you're out there. We know you're dealing with stress. We know it's not fun, but you can do this. You got this. So good luck. If you're getting value from the show, please do subscribe, share it with friends, and let me know what connects with you. For any feedback or questions about product ownership, you can contact the show on Twitter at DeliverCast or email us at DeliverCast@gmail.com. Had one question from a listener, Christina, I believe, says, what are the books you would recommend to someone who is thinking about launching Scrum Methods at Work? Inspiring, practical, and simple examples of changing the work or the working environment. I'll give kind of two that I really like. One is Heinrich Niebuhr's Lean Scrum from the Trenches series. I think he's done two of those books, but it's real world, him working with teams and teams getting better. So it doesn't lay out, it lays out some theory, but it's much more, this is how we did this stories. I really like those books from him. And then I think there's some really good Mike Cohen books talk well about, you know, how to do those processes. Any other books that you kind of are inspired by for new folks that are looking at Scrum?
So in a similar kind of vein, the Mitch Lacy's book, Scrum Field Guide, is again another set of practical stories about, you know, how to get started and what a journey might look like. I mean, with Henrik's stuff, with Mitch's stuff, with anybody's stuff, don't expect your story to be like theirs.
Yeah.
I mean, it will be in some respects, but it's going to be your own story. So that's part of this ambiguity. So yeah, find something that works. I personally like stories, and that's why I put stories and my real experiences into my books. Yep. But if you're looking for something a little bit more theoretical, then there's so many books out there.
Yeah, there really are. I have a list on my consulting site of books that I really recommend. And Jeff's books are on there, and there's some other books on there as well. That go a little bit more advanced. I think they're not introductory books. I think they're, once you've understand the basics, then these are really things that you need to get deep into this with. And that's one of the reasons I like doing the show. It's one of the reasons I like recommending those types of books, because they really do get nerdy about product ownership. So I love that. All right. Thank you, Jeff Watts. Jeff is at Jeff C. Watts on Twitter. The Agile Pubcast, you can listen to glasses clinking and all other kinds of things when he does his live stream as well at the Agile Pubcast. And then go visit Inspect and Adapt to see all of his training classes, all his other materials, including, Jeff, now's the time where you talk about your wonderful new Cards app.
So, yeah, I've recently launched an app. Over the years, I've created a number of decks of coaching cards where people can just carry some prompts around with them, whether they be some questions just to reflect as a product owner, thinking, what do I do next? How can I just make things better? Whether it's to do with your perfectionism trait, just a few questions, thoughts for the day, experiments, techniques you can try. So I had these physical decks, and then just the number of them got out of hand, really, and people say, oh, I've got to carry all these things around with me. Can't you have an app just on my phone? So basically I digitized them, and that's also enabled me to release a number of them with lower overhead. So I've now got 15 decks of cards, ranging from positive affirmations to my book in card format, to some core values cards, things that you can use for facilitation. And basically, there's a couple of free decks on there, and every deck that I create, there's free cards from them. So you don't have to pay anything, but if you do like them, and you can buy more cards. So it's the Agile Coaching Cards app. You can find on the Google Play Store and iTunes, the App Store. And it's been going really well so far. So yeah.
And it's very good. I got the opportunity to test and made a little video about it, and really liked a lot of the content, really liked a lot of the, you know, having Jeff in your pocket thoughts about, you know, the cards, and you're updating them and adding new things, and people are, you know, tweeting. It seems like a really good, it seems like people have really taken to a lot of the ideas to it. So I appreciate it.
It's kind of an agile approach.
Yes. Yes.
So live, I'm still adding features. So we're getting feedback on it. We're getting feedback. People say, oh, I like this card. There's another one that I think you could suggest. So they're adding cards. They're suggesting cards, and I can add them in. We're adding new features. We're adding new decks. So yeah, it's quite interactive in that respect.
Yep. And you had to be the product owner for that, and you had to cut things from your first release, which hurt. So...
It's hard.
Yes, it is. Love that. So go get the app, try it out, and give Jeff some feedback. So thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome, Corey. Great to be here.
And if you are in need of any one-to-one coaching or consulting to help you find your product owner balance, you can check out SeekTaiJunior.com. All the opinions expressed here are mine. You can find more of them at Is Corey Bryant on Twitter. That is episode 87 delivered. Go out and own the outcome.
Podcast Network. For more shows and information, visit agilepodcastnetwork.com.